From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Robbie Feinberg with the news on this day in Maine, Monday, May 10th, 2021.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and by the Maine law firm of Eaton Peabody, serving generations of Maine families and businesses from offices in Augusta, Bangor, Brunswick, Ellsworth, and Portland.
Some lawmakers, advocates, and former residents of the Long Creek Youth Development Center are urging members of the legislature's Criminal Justice Committee to support legislation that would close the facility within the next 2 years. Mal Leary reports.
Long Creek, the state's youth correctional facility, has a budget of over $18 million a year to house about 28 individuals. That works out to about $700,000 a year per resident. Democratic Representative Grayson Luckner of Portland, who sponsored the bill, says there are better ways to use that money to treat young offenders.
That amount of spending has not mitigated or reduced the fact that Long Creek has been a place of violence and trauma for young people for too long.
No one opposed the bill at the hearing, although some committee members expressed concerns about how violent young offenders would be handled. In written testimony, Corrections Commissioner Randall Liberty says while the Mills administration is open to looking at alternative treatment options, it does not support closing Long Creek. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
The Maine CDC is reporting another 214 new cases of COVID-19 today and no additional deaths. In all, more than 64,000 cases of the disease have been identified and 795 Mainers have died. Hospitalization numbers are on the rise compared to a week ago, with hospitals yesterday reporting 134 patients. Of those, 53 were in critical care and 24 were on ventilators. More than 43% of all Mainers have now received all the required vaccine shots, and more than 48% of all Mainers have had at least one dose of vaccine. The Maine CDC's next briefing on the pandemic is scheduled for 2 o'clock on Wednesday. Maine Public will bring that to you live. More children and younger adults continue to be hospitalized for COVID-19 in Maine. A year ago, the average age of people hospitalized with the disease in Maine was in the mid-70s. Now, it's the mid-40s. Patty White has more on what's driving the trend.
Maine is one of the few states where case rates are staying high, and so are hospitalizations. According to the New York Times COVID tracker, the rate of hospitalizations has increased 18% over the past 2 weeks. And Dr. Dora Mills, Chief Health Improvement Officer for Maine Health, says the health system has seen more children hospitalized over the past month and a half than was seen over the past year.
We're seeing really a very different type of pandemic than we saw just a few months ago. And we believe this is mostly due to the B.1.1.7 or the UK variant, which is 50 to 100% more contagious, but also disproportionately more contagious amongst young people.
Speaking on Maine Calling, Mills also said that the majority of hospitalized patients are from rural areas and haven't been fully vaccinated. Northern Light Health is seeing similar trends, says Dr. James Jarvis. He says many patients are so sick they're in critical care and need ventilators. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Maine Superior Court Judge Valerie Stanfill has been nominated to be the next Chief Justice of the state's highest court. Governor Janet Mills announced today that she's nominating Stanfill for the position, previously held by Lee Sofley, who stepped down last year to head the University of Maine School of Law. Stanfill of Wayne has served as a judge in the state for nearly 15 years and has presided over Androscoggin, Oxford, and Franklin counties on the Maine Superior Court since last February. Stanfill has also worked in private practice and was the acting director of the Cumberland Legal Aid Clinic. The legislature's Judiciary Committee and the state Senate must both confirm Stanfill to the position of Chief Justice. Recycling costs have gone up for Maine communities in recent years, and that's forced many of them to burn or bury their trash. Now, state lawmakers are considering two bills that would help towns to safely dispose of a very common type of waste, plastic and cardboard packaging. Both measures would force the companies that generate all that packaging to help pay for its disposal in Maine. Representative Nicole Grachowski, an Ellsworth Democrat who introduced one of the bills during a public hearing on Monday, says that it would pressure companies such as Amazon to use less packaging in the goods they sell to Maine consumers, and in some cases, to use safer materials.
We're able to try to phase out toxins in our plastics, for instance, and in other products by having the producers that are using those chemicals pay a little bit more than people who are using, let's say, you know, corrugated cardboard that doesn't have any additives in it that we're concerned about.
Advocates say that similar programs have helped boost recycling rates in other countries, but no other state has yet started one. The Natural Resources Council of Maine supports Grachowski's bill. Companies that sell goods in Maine have previously opposed such legislation because of its cost, but some of them are now backing a similar bill from Democratic State Senator James Dill of Old Town. The town of Castine has begun the process of renaming two islands in its harbor. Residents voted on Saturday during a town hall to form a committee charged with seeking potential alternative names for Upper and Lower Negro Islands, which date back to at least the early 1800s. The vote count was 44-33 to pursue the renaming, which could then be decided through a ballot initiative in November. If the changes are adopted, the town would recommend the new name to the U.S. Geological Survey. A state authority wants to bring faster internet speeds to Maine. The Connect ME Authority has voted to propose future state-funded links be capable of 100 megabit per second downloads and uploads. That's four times the current download standard of 25 megabits per second. And it's way above the current 3 megabit per second upload standard. The proposed higher speed standard will be open to public comment and a hearing before it becomes final. The state is poised to ramp up its broadband efforts with tens of millions of dollars of federal aid and a state bond issue. Maine schools would be required to teach courses in the history of African Americans, of the Holocaust, and of genocide under legislation being considered in Augusta. The proposed requirements went to a public hearing before the legislature's Education Committee, which heard from relatives of Holocaust victims, descendants of slaves, and high school students. Paige Sawyer attends Ellsworth High School, where she says her study of these histories has meaning in today's world.
Why should learning about a tragic past be so important today? It is very important because genocides are still happening around the world. Right now in China, the Uyghur Muslims are facing a mass genocide at the hands of the Chinese government.
Other supporters pointed to recent polling indicating that more than half of those surveyed in Maine between the ages of 18 and 39 didn't know the scope of the Holocaust, in which 6 million Jews were killed. No one opposed the legislation at the hearing, but concerns were raised about how the mandate would work and be paid for. President Joe Biden is proposing the federal government spend $200 billion to provide universal pre-kindergarten. That proposal would no doubt benefit many, but there could be some hurdles for Maine to overcome. Morning Edition host Erwin Gratz spoke with Maine Children's Alliance senior policy analyst Rita Furlow about the proposal.
So in a nutshell, what's at stake in this proposal for Maine families?
It is a complete game changer for Maine families to be able to access a pre-K program for their three-year-old, their four-year-old that is free. As almost anyone who has a child or a grandchild knows, childcare is incredibly expensive and families are really struggling to pay those expenses and also just to even find childcare that's available near where they work and live.
And it's an issue the state has grappled with for some time. There was a proposal just in the last legislative session for universal pre-K that didn't make it, probably because of the cost.
For this to really happen, states alone really can't, you know, shoulder this financial burden. It's just gotten to the point where families really are at the breaking point. The cost is, you know, anywhere around $10,000 a year, right? The same price as sending a student to the University of Maine.
And I imagine, too, it's become a source of inequity around the state.
Absolutely. Based on income, certainly. And then, right, we see dramatic differences depending upon where you live. Particularly rural counties in Maine have much less access
There's so much about this that probably still is not known, but are you confident the program as the Biden people have envisioned it, the amount of money they seem to be setting aside for it, is that going to be enough to make this actually happen?
I think it's going to be a significant start. This is not just a challenge in Maine. It's a challenge across the country. And it's a system that we've, I think, really come to realize, again, as a result of the pandemic, that our market-based system that it relies on just doesn't work. And so it's really going to take the federal government stepping up and making this investment that's going to be the beginning. This is a complicated system that's a mix of private, for-profit businesses, nonprofits, and then, you know, organizations like Head Start and public preschool. And so we will have to figure out how can those pieces work together, which I think is a big part of the Biden proposal.
Might there be some logistical issues, either enough space or enough trained early childhood workers to make this happen?
Those are definitely issues. So it's going to look different in different communities. So, you know, there may be some school districts that actually have physical space and they maybe they don't have a teacher, but maybe they can bring in, you know, someone from Head Start, someone from a private childcare and employ them in their classroom. But we do have to figure out a way, right, so that we can not displace a lot of the early childhood educators who are doing this work, but instead bring them into a system, provide them, more importantly, with better wages. We are losing people in this field because the pay is so discouraging. Its average pay is around $24,000 a year. So that really would be improved by this kind of a system.
Is there ample evidence that this would be beneficial for the children?
Oh, absolutely. That's the thing we are absolutely clear on and have known for such a long time. One of the most exciting things in this field is brain research. And we know so much more than we knew 10 years ago, 20 years ago, about the importance of early childhood education, about the give and take that children need, the relationships, and how that is so important to their brain structure. We know it's going to be the best thing for kids too. But I think we will see lots of work still needing to be done by the Biden administration to turn this into a reality.
Rita Furlow, the senior policy analyst for the Maine Children's Alliance. Thank you very much for the time. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. And coming up on Maine Calling on Tuesday, the subject is gardening. You can listen to that Tuesday at 11 a.m. I'm Robbie Feinberg. Thanks for listening.